Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Wirecast. I know it has been a bit, but Amiibo Jason and I are still alive. This is Hero TJ, and we've got a lot of exciting Nintendo stuff to talk to. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Incredibly tired. This is the... I mean, technically it's our first podcast since I've had my daughter. We had a live stream since.
Yes, that's right.
But not officially a podcast. So my daughter is now 1 month old, and she is waking up every 2 hours to eat, which is typical for a kid. So sleep is not something I'm getting a great deal of consistently. So, I mean, I'm getting sleep, obviously, but it's not... Have you ever had... I mean, obviously you have kids. There's something different between getting 8 hours of sleep compared to getting like 8 hours of sleep in 1.5 hour chunks.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like it kind of breaks you to a
Your
certain
circadian
degree.
Rhythm kind of gets disrupted and...
Oh, yeah. So I'm at a point right now where it's like 8:45. So my daughter eats at like 8 and then at 10 and then at midnight. So 8:45 is typically like I lay down until the next feeding. So, but I had to come back and do this with you. There's so much stuff to talk about.
Yeah, it's been, like, the last time we chatted was literally the day before the character reveal for Super Smash Bros. For the next Fighter's Pass. And we had speculated all kinds of characters. Banjo-Kazooie, we did not. Steve never even passed our lips. I remember when they were still doing the original cast for Smash Bros., or the base cast, rather, and people were really hoping for Banjo. And they're like, Banjo's not going to happen. It's going to be Steve. And I remember I tweeted something to the effect of, if a Microsoft character does get into the game, it's going to be Banjo. And if Steve gets into the game, he's a really appropriate fit for a Mii Fighter costume skin. And I could see him as like a sword fighter or something.
Yeah.
But never did I imagine that he would be implemented as an actual playable character. And never did I imagine that he would have a moveset that was so technically complex. And I, on the one hand, I'll just give my initial impressions. I have had a chance to play it. I'll give my initial impressions in about one sentence. He is so much more impressive than I ever thought a character could be, and in no way enjoyable for my style of play.
Like I get that.
I look at the type of mechanics that Masahiro Sakurai was able to implement with this character, where he's got a resource management system, he has all of these movesets that are pulled straight out of Minecraft. He's literally mining and crafting. He took the spirit of what Minecraft is and found some way to make it work as a fighting game character. And in that way, it's so authentic and so true to his source that it's hard not to be impressed.
Yeah.
But
I'm in the same boat where... So I played very little of Steve so far. But what I did play, it's bizarre that we're seeing these kind of mechanics in this title.
Yeah.
It feels like a new game.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when Min Min was first playable and I had my first chance to get my hands on Min Min. It was a very subtle difference of being able to control, you know, each arm independently in the game. This is on, obviously, a completely separate level. There's a luck mechanic to a certain degree that you can mine for better resources. There are certain things where you can physically block, create barriers on ledges to prevent your enemy or your opponents from getting back onto the stage. I'm really curious to see how the competitive scene is taking to Steve. I haven't seen it yet.
Because they tend to not appreciate random elements. I remember there was talk about Hero being banned because of one move. But a lot of Steve's playstyle centers around his mining. And Sakurai did create a contingent for that. So if you're playing in competitive... if you're playing on the... Is it the Omega versions or the Battlefield versions of the stages? I hope I'm not getting this wrong. Instead of it being based on the terrain that you're on, what you're mining, it's in a set order, kind of like Olimar plucks Pikmin. And so he did create a way so that it does avoid the randomness, but still, I think mining certain more rare and precious materials like diamonds or something, that could be the difference between winning or losing the game.
And, it's kind of like the Nine Hammer, though, too, with Game & Watch.
That's a good point. You got a lot of characters that have some like unique crit rate where if you happen to get lucky that particular time, that is an aspect of playing as those characters. He carries his mining station around with him. Well, he doesn't carry it around with, but it populates on the stage wherever he spawns at the beginning. And that's different. That's a different thing. So having a character who not only can you attack, but you can also kind of destroy his crafting station. Doesn't really have much, at least in my experience with it, it doesn't have much of a purpose unless they're in the process of trying to utilize it and you can destroy it before they do it. Otherwise, it just comes back really fast. You can't like destroy it and be like, ha ha, Steve, you're screwed for the rest of this match.
So, I mean, my thought process on this character is we are going to see, I think we're going to see a lot of changes and updates coming down the line over the next few weeks and months. I think it's going to take a lot of time for Nintendo to get this character to a place where it's appropriate for competitive use. So,
on the speaking 21st, of appropriate, what did you think about Steve's victory screen?
So yeah, I did an article on that, and it's funny because before I found out it got removed, I had never seen it. So I never heard the hype. I never saw a meme. Like, I saw none of it until it was already gone, which broke my heart. But yeah, that's something that it surprises me that Nintendo would let slide through. I mean, it was so obvious. Even the way it kind of, like, bloomed at the top. If I can go that far into it.
I never saw it. It never came up in my play. But I also only played Steve in Classic Mode and then also on the Spirit Battles. So in Classic Mode and Spirit Battles, you don't have a victory screen.
Yeah, no victory screens.
So it just didn't
come
up.
You saw the photos, I'm assuming, right?
I saw it only because so many people were tweeting about it. And then I was like, and when I first heard it, people were pretty cryptic about it. They were just saying, I can't believe Steve's victory screen. I don't know how that got past Nintendo. Is there any way that could have possibly been an accident that had to have been deliberate? So, like, what is all this about? People always make a lot of to-do about nothing. And then I saw it, and I was like, how did that get by? How did they not know? Was that deliberate? I don't know. Like, were they just trying to slip one under and see if they could get in there?
Well, they did.
Just everything about it was a little bit funny.
Yeah.
And I think removing it was the right move.
I think this is a proof that even in our 30s, that penis humor is still funny.
Will it ever not be?
It will always be funny. So besides them removing Steve's meat, they also added on the 21st 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hotfixes for Steve, ranging from, let's see, fixing an issue where sometimes an opposing fighter would go through the landscape when Steve Alex created a block at a certain location. Let's see what else we have here. Fix the issue where opposing fighters carried in Steve's Minecraft or mine cart would sometimes be warped into the original location, which they were picked up. Again, this is one of 9 different bugs that they patched out.
Yeah, what happened with Steve, I think, is the general population of Smash players has become the new beta testers because, as Sakurai said, it's difficult to play test in their current development environment, and so they did the best they could, and I think it's a reasonable enough compromise between trying to get a character out on a deadline and then also because we do live in a time where they can correct things as these emerge, they can patch them out. I know that you want to put something out as polished as possible, and Nintendo is famous for keeping things in development until they are 100% sure it's perfect. This is not a 100% perfect situation.
Yeah.
So they compromised, and I'm personally okay with it. It's not like a Assassin's Creed situation where characters' faces like melt off if you play the game for too long or whatever the case is. They didn't release an unfinished game. They released a character who was as playtested as they could get him under their current conditions, and everyone's kind of like working around the complications involved and
their
current development scheme.
So, I mean, for the most part, Steve is not a character I intend on using in the game. He's not even an amiibo that I'm overly looking forward to.
What if they did something cool with him?
I mean, I'd be fine with that. It would depend on what they did. I have lost faith in Nintendo doing something cool with amiibo anymore.
What? Look at the last ones we got. Joker looks amazing.
Yeah, he's got a nice base. I'll give you that. But, I mean, we haven't seen anything like Game & Watch since Amiibo were in their heyday.
Well, what if it was like Game & Watch, where you had, like, Steve, Alex, Enderman, and the other one, they're all just swappable base?
I'd love it. They're not going to do it.
What I'm hoping that they do is, you know how, maybe you didn't see this, when you get the spirits, they have a classic piece of artwork, and then they have their Smash render. Steve is a little bit unusual because he has this blocky little grainy pixelated image as his default that looks like it was ripped straight out of Minecraft. And then his other one is him in this cool little pose with I want to say a pickaxe. I think Alex is the one who has a sword.
Sure.
And they're the exact same shape, but they don't have any of the pixelation. They're very smooth. They're actually very polished looking. I like that look a lot better, to be honest. And I don't know if that's a Smash render or if that's Steve from another thing, because I have zero familiarity with Minecraft. I've played nothing. I recognize the pixelated version from the game. But if that's the Smash render and not the pixelated one, I wonder if that's the one that the amiibo is going to be, because all amiibo are based on their Smash renders. So are we going to get this character who's just standing in a perfectly upright, boring position that there's nothing to distinguish from some random toy you bought and an amiibo? Or are we going to get that super cool, unique pose? I think that pose would get me a lot more excited about it than if it was just the neutral standing figure.
Yeah, just based on everything we've seen so far, my guess is it's going to be that very boring standing figure. Maybe he'll be standing on like a block, like a Minecraft block, like a pretty much anything that could spice up the base. I'm not expecting this thing to come out anytime soon anyway. I mean, we're supposed to be waiting until fall of 2021
before we get the next batch. I'm hoping that was a mistake, because Nintendo,
they did delete it.
Yeah, they deleted that tweet and then they retweeted it, which just said 2021. It didn't say fall. So
it was kind of an odd. Like, it wasn't like text in a tweet. It was like
embedded in the picture.
On the picture.
Yeah.
So somebody actually had to think about what to put on this thing.
Or maybe they have a template and they just didn't swap it out. They just didn't notice. I've done that so many times on silly Photoshop projects.
That would suck, though, fall 2021.
That would be a year from now.
Yeah.
That would really, really be a long time. And I guess it's hard to immediately write it off as being a mistake, because production and manufacturing, we know, is dramatically slowed down. So who knows what their situation is? I have to imagine that their production chain is dramatically affected. So
yeah, I wouldn't be shocked.
Being able to, everything that they make is produced in China, at least it has been. So are they just still trying to carry on with business as usual as best as they can? Or are they trying to come up with alternate ways of production? I don't know. So, and Nintendo's not generally very forthcoming about their internal workings.
It's very true.
But amiibo are in an exciting state, more than they've ever been.
I mean, they're still here, which is great. I mean, they've exceeded the expectations or the lifespan for Toys to Life by a pretty high margin.
Yeah, I shouldn't say best they've ever been. I should say the best that they've been in a while. We thought they were dead, and now we've still got those cat Mario and Peach to look forward to.
Yeah. So, I mean, Toys to Life is, I mean, expanding to a certain degree. That's a good segue into Mario Kart Live.
Yeah.
Which I had completely
written off, and then I saw you having fun with it. Now I'm thinking it might be the way to go for Christmas this year, if we can find a way to use it.
It's interesting to a degree. So Nintendo sent us a review copy of it, and I had a blast setting it up with my daughter. If you have the time, and more importantly, if you have the space, and not just any space, it has to be the right kind of space.
Your house is carpeted, right?
It's carpeted, but we also have a kitchen that is hardwood.
Okay.
So we initially set it up in the living room. That's where we have the most space. We ran into some issues with the carpet, but for the most part, it was fine. And then we moved it into the kitchen. And we made a separate course, and we were much happier with it running on hardwood.
Okay.
So, which makes sense. But the setup process, I think, is the most fun, which is odd because you're not doing anything with the game at all. Because it was kind of a bonding experience with my daughter. My, 1 month old is upstairs, so I'm getting some quality time with the 7-year-old. We're discussing like what amiibos are going to go where because we made this amiibo circuit.
Yeah, I love that. You guys used the amiibo as the course boundaries.
Exactly. Yeah,
that looked great.
And it's funny because we had very little in the house that we could use in that abundance. So amiibo just made the most sense because we had so many of them.
And thematically, how cool.
Oh, yeah.
For so sure. As you're driving in this AR, you get to see all your favorite Nintendo friends on the way.
And you get to run them over, which yeah. I did several times. But
like I love said, that Amiibo Jason, this like hardcore collector, you're not so precious about him that you can't still use him to play with.
No. I mean, there's certain ones. Like, QB was not in the lineup in this one.
Understandable.
But like I said, I think the most fun I had was setting up the course. Driving on the course is semi-buggy to a certain level.
Oh, really?
So I ran into certain issues where the course, because the way it works, you have to set up the gates. There's 4 gates. And you have to drive through the gates in a certain order. So you could put gate 1 here, gate 2 here, 3 here, 4 there. And you don't have to, like, go in a circle. Like, you don't have to go, like, straight from 1 to 2. You can, like, do curves and little whatever you want to do. As long as you make it through all 4 gates, it remembers the course that you took. And then, at that point, it maps it out. It's what maps out your room in AR. And you're good to go for the race. I found certain points where the track shifted, like, in some cases, like, an entire foot. Left or to the right. So the course would tell me it goes straight through my couch, which obviously you can't do.
Right.
The competitors can do it, though. So when you're racing against everybody else, they're just going through the couch and you have to find a detour.
Those cheating Koopalings.
I know, right? Besides that, though, it wasn't something that was happening so often that it wasn't fun. But the races itself, unless you have a big amount of space, are going to be short.
What would you say is the minimum acceptable square footage for this?
I would say 10 by 10.
Okay. That's more manageable than I thought.
So keep in mind, if I don't know if you saw the video I put out. If you see the cart moving in the real world, it moves very slow. So it looks like it's moving much faster due to the perspective that you're in, like, on the screen. Mm-hmm. But it moves very slow in your home. And it takes turns very slowly. And it can do drifting to a certain degree, too, which is super fun.
How is the turn radius? Like, can you do...
It's very good.
Can you do a 90-degree turn?
Almost. Not quite 90, but it's darn close. I have a couple of videos online right now where you can see that the radius that it can do. But it's not as bad as I thought it would be.
Yeah, I guess even in Mario Kart, you can't do a 90-degree turn. But you could do an almost 90-degree turn. If it's curved a little bit, you can do it.
Yeah. So there are some tight curves in the kitchen one that I did because I pretty much had to. And as long as you take it slow enough, you're fine. But overall, like I said, I was impressed with what you can do in the game. $100 is a lot to ask. It's very Labo-ish to a certain degree. It's like this DIY thing to do. You're paying for the experience, I would say, more than the actual game itself.
Yeah.
So I'm sure my daughter and I are going to set up another course soon. Like, she's going to decorate it. It's going to be an entire day's worth of fun. And that's all you can really ask for stuff like this. It's kind of an experience. If you're expecting something like, I want to have a full-fledged Mario Kart experience, play Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Like, there's no reason to play Mario Kart Tour if you're looking to get some, like, diehard racing in. But if you're looking for fun, if you're looking to be creative, it's a very, very good option.
It does seem like the kind of thing my kids would be into. My reservation was the space.
Yeah.
I live in an apartment. Basically, everybody lives in an apartment in Taiwan. And we have tile floor, but I've covered most of it in, like, Taekwondo mats. I don't know if
you could picture, like, work very well.
Like, foam mats. I think it would work, too. But I don't know if I could conveniently enough move some of the pieces of furniture. Maybe I could. So I don't know if I have quite – I might have about 10 by 10. That might be pretty close to what I have.
So watch the last 5 minutes of my video, and you're going to see the course I made in my kitchen.
Okay.
It's very short, but there's a lot of twists, there's a lot of turns, and it's in a very small section of my house.
All right.
So check that out. Let me know your thoughts.
It's pretty encouraging. I was immediately writing it off because of space, not because of coolness. Yeah. Like the coolness, and I actually think the price is kind of not bad at all, because the game is free, essentially. You're just paying for the RC racer, and I've seen Jack's Pacific Mario RC cars for 40 bucks.
Yeah.
Or, and I don't know how great they are. I don't know how good they are, but that's not really that far out of the price range of what you could get an RC car for when you consider that it's combining the AR technology with the game itself.
And you don't even have to set up a course. You can just drive around with it in your
house. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's better.
To a certain degree, it's just a toy, too.
Cool. How responsive is it?
Very.
Very?
Oh. Yeah, it's very. So, but again, keep in mind, it's relatively slow.
That's actually good. I think it being slow makes me more ambitious that my kids would have the ability to be able to control it. Because it looks fast through the prism of the Switch screen, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it looks like significantly faster. So if you play back the footage of me physically going through the course from the perspective of the camera on the cart, it looks like a standard Mario Kart race in like maybe 50 to 100 cc.
That's cool.
There is 150 and 200 cc mode in this game. I have not tested it out. I'm super curious to see what it would be, but I do not have the space for that kind of speed.
Okay. I think my kids would probably hover in the 50 range anyway, at least right now.
Yeah, 50 seems like if you have a small space, that's probably where you should keep it.
All right, that's cool.
But yeah, I mean, I am pleasantly surprised by it. So I know your kids would love it. They're very creative kids. If it's like an afternoon of fun you're looking for, $100 might be steep. But as long as you do a couple courses, it's worth the money.
I'm looking for like multiple afternoons of fun. And I think because this is kind of my kids' thing, it's the kind of stuff that they are into, I think that they could potentially get a meaningful amount of fun out of it.
Yeah.
So I'll definitely check out your video, and that might help inform my opinion a little bit.
Yeah, let me know. It's my daughter's debut, by the way. She's in the video. She is very excited. She was like desperate to show her friends that she's a YouTuber. So she's very, very excited for it.
Very cool.
I do want to point out one other thing that happened, I believe, yesterday. I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago. Yeah, it was yesterday. We got, let's see, our first look and our first announcement of Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light coming to the U.S. for the very first time.
Oh, yeah. I did see that collector's edition. That is how you do a collector's edition.
It's interesting for a few reasons. I mean, number one, Nintendo hasn't done anything similar to this, I think, ever. Typically, Nintendo doesn't release, like, replicas of old, like, hardware. So this comes with a replica NES cart that looks like it's clear.
Yeah.
I'm almost positive this thing looks like it's made of acrylic or something like that. A replica Nintendo sleeve, like the old school NES sleeves that we had when we were kids. A replica game box, like an NES game box for this, which is gorgeous. I love this thing.
Yeah.
An art book, a Nintendo Power poster, a map, and this gorgeous 30th anniversary Fire Emblem box.
I know. It's amazing. Because Fire Emblem is boring and stupid, I will not buy this, but I love how unbelievably amazing this collector's edition is. If this were a Zelda thing, like they were giving, hey, here's a replica of the gold cart. I have my original gold cart, but for some reason, I still don't think I'd be able to resist that. I don't know why Fire Emblem is getting this treatment. Out of all of Nintendo's franchises, why didn't Mario's 35th anniversary physical release have something like this? Don't you think that would have been... That would have been Mario. That would have been so unbelievably successful.
We got the pin set.
You got the pin set.
I got the pin set.
Even though I jumped through all the hoops to get that pin set.
That was its own disaster, by the way. That is inexcusable from Nintendo, that whole pin set debacle.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a pretty ridiculous thing. But what are your impressions on this Fire Emblem thing?
I am in the same boat. I'm not a big Fire Emblem fan. In fact, I'm not a Fire Emblem fan whatsoever.
Would you go so far as to say it is boring and stupid?
I would say boring. Stupid, not so much.
I'm just kidding.
I have too many friends that are into it.
To tease our Fire Emblem friends. It's a game that I actually think is quite intelligent. It just doesn't really push my buttons.
But this is an expensive set for... pretty much an NES ROM that you're getting.
I never saw the price. How expensive is it?
So if you want to pick up the digital... If you want to pick up the collector's edition, it's $59.
Oh, that's not that expensive. I was thinking you were going to say something like... You're not getting a game?
Well, you're getting a download code for a game. There's no physical game in this.
Oh, interesting.
You get a lot of other physical things in this. But yeah, no physical game cart.
Oh. Well, the game is probably, 2 megabytes?
If that.
Yeah.
If that.
It's an awesome-looking set, though. I think it's definitely worth the price. If you're Does it come with, like, an art book? Did I see that correctly?
Yeah, there's a deluxe art book.
Yeah, the art book alone is $50. Like, look at all those Zelda art books.
I don't know. Nintendo, anytime they put an art book out in a collection... it's not great.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, the last Fire Emblem Collector's edition that I picked up, it was Shadows of Valentia or something like that.
Yeah.
The art book was super skinny. It was pretty ugly for the most part. And it was like 15 pages. It wasn't great.
Yeah, that's kind of like the Explorer's Guide for Breath of the Wild.
But this is another weird thing about this is it's another example of Nintendo going the Disney Vault route with this.
Yeah.
So they said it's only available for a limited time, the same as not just the collector's edition, but the game itself.
Yeah,
so if you want to download the game on the eShop, you can't unless you get it right away. I think they said it's until March of 2021. Same as with the Mario collection.
I get that with physical releases, absolutely. But it's interesting that they're also choosing to do this digitally. I wonder if it is just to get this initial push of people who don't want to miss out. Because it's so easy to say with digital games, I'll just pick it up later. So easy to say that, because you can always just go there and do it. And Nintendo might be trying to find some way to circumvent that mentality where people don't feel like they need to jump on it immediately. If it's a game that I'm into, I jump on it right away.
I do want to point out, though, if you want to pick up the game on its own, just the game, nothing else, it's $6 on the eShop.
That's kind of expensive for a Nintendo game, but But they did have to go through the process of localizing this.
They localized this, but not Mother 3.
Yeah, I think it's also a little less controversial than Mother 3 too, though.
Would you consider Mother 3 to be controversial?
There are a few things in the game that they would probably have to figure out a way to make the censors at Nintendo of America comfortable, yeah.
I mean, there is literally a Fire Emblem game called Fire Emblem Genealogy of the Holy War.
Yeah.
Like, Fire Emblem is not a very PC game.
I don't think it's that the game that Mother 3 isn't PC. I just think that they don't really know what avenue to approach certain aspects of the game, especially in a modern climate. Like, there are some things that, in its time, certain things were less controversial. And maybe now more people would take issue with it. So I don't really know if that has any impact on it whatsoever. I haven't played Mother 3, but I do know that some things I'm curious how they would deal with. There's a lot of things that you see censored from Japan when it comes to the West. And sometimes they're not even things that are It's like silly things. But yeah, I don't know. I really don't know what they're going to do with it. I wonder if we're ever going to see Mother 3. My feeling is that if we were going to, we would have already.
I mean, this one took, what, 30 years to
make
it?
Good point. So all we have to do is wait another 20 years and you got it.
Nintendo likes their money. So my thought would be at some point, we're going to see some sort of physical release for the game. I still have hope. I have no idea when it's going to happen. But the fact that this is getting, this NES game is getting a $60 physical release, I think gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, it is cool though. I saw that set and I was like, oh, that's awesome. And the commercial is so good. I love the commercial. For those of you who haven't seen it, it basically opens with these two kids playing Smash Brothers, and one of them's like, Marth and Roy, who are these guys? And they're like, you don't know who Marth and Roy is? They're from Fire Emblem. What's Fire Emblem? And it shows that where Marth and Roy appear in the game, Japan only. And it recounted my exact feeling when I didn't have a friend who was hip to Fire Emblem who could explain to me what it was all about. But I had that exact same experience as a kid, like, Marth and Roy, I've played every Nintendo game that's ever been made. I know every single first-party Nintendo character in existence. I've never seen these two before, but they have swords, and that's cool. And so I said, oh, that's interesting, Japan only. And then as I started to learn more about the games, I was like, oh, these are not TJ games.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I tried so much with Three Houses, only mostly because of peer pressure, where everybody around me was getting so hyped for this game. It was all they could talk about on my team. And I tried the best I could. I made it maybe 2 hours into the game and I just could not go any further. So again, it wasn't bad. It's just not for me.
Right. That's really, I know I said it was stupid and boring, but my real attitude towards Fire Emblem is that it is quite impressive and thorough and unique and just does not appeal to me.
Makes sense. And that's fine. That's the joy of video games. But I think it's one of the reasons why you and I are so passionate about characters like Steve deserving a place in Super Smash Bros. It might not be a character we grew up with or that we're fundamentally attached to.
Right.
But like for my daughter, who was like screaming that Steve made it into the game because she's a Minecraft fanatic. Yeah. I mean, that's who it's for.
I never saw it as a possibility. Won't be for you. Because I saw Steve not to jump back to this, but I saw Steve as like an avatar, kind of a blank slate. I didn't really see him as a character. I didn't see him as a character at all. But what it's hard to deny. I'm really, I don't want to say troubled, but I tend to avoid the word deserved when it comes to Smash Brothers, because there's so many characters in there that if we were going by their pedigree, do they deserve to be in there? That's not really the way that Nintendo or Sakurai approaches it. But it's impossible to deny Steve's impact on the gaming industry, the number one best-selling game in the world. And so me knowing so little about it and having never played it and it having no appeal to me makes me not recognize a lot of the things that the character that are character-specific aspects that he brings to Smash. But I can certainly recognize the cultural impact and the impact on the gaming industry. So to get that character into Smash Brothers is a big deal. It makes sense to me. And the way that they implemented it is just, like I said, I can't think of a better word to describe than impressive. Straight.
Yeah.
I was floored watching the video. My jaw was on the floor. And this is from somebody who does not appreciate Minecraft. And that's not an insult towards Minecraft. It's just like Fire Emblem. It's just not my thing.
It really does open up the doors for what could potentially happen down the line with the rest of the DLC.
Yeah. I still think Crash is so likely.
Oh, I think so too. And Waluigi.
I don't know.
Holding out hope for that one, I guess.
You know what? This is why I think Waluigi's not likely now. Steve introduced so many complex mechanics to the game. I saw this picture, and I'm going to describe it to the best of my ability, because I think it really speaks to my attitude about Smash Brothers. It showed the classic character roster, and then next to it, it said A equals attack, B equals special. The DLC characters, and it showed like extremely complex mathematical formula. And I was like, yeah, that's right. Every single DLC character that's been introduced, it seems like one of the significant aspects to each character is that Sakurai wants to introduce a new element that no previous character had. And I understand wanting to add value and wanting to feel like each one of these characters is providing something that is not in the game already. How that has been manifesting itself is that each character is becoming more and more complex. What appeals to me about Smash Brothers is the simplicity, where I could pick any character randomly in the roster and have fun because I know how to play as them. I don't need to know all the subtle nuances of the character, but I have like some tools in my belt with every character because I know A is attack and B is special. That does not hold true across the board with some of these special characters or DLC characters, and it certainly is not true with Steve. You need to like take a class to understand how to use Steve.
Oh yeah.
So
like, again, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I'm not going to learn how to use Steve. I'm just going to be very honest.
That's my exact sentiment. It's not a bad thing. My daughter will,
and she's going to kick my ass with Steve.
Totally.
I'm sure.
Totally.
I do want to take a few moments real quick to give you a brief update on a game that Ubisoft gave me the honor of playing for 4 hours this week. And that is Immortals Fenyx Rising, previously known as Gods and Monsters. I'm going to do my best to cover everything I can about this game in a very short period of time. And the reason I'm spending time in the podcast to do this is because I think it deserves more eyes on it than what's currently on it. This game surprised me. This game took me to places I wasn't expecting to go in this game. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with this. I expected this to be a very generic, very forgettable experience for the Switch. And I think it's going to be anything but that.
Has it released yet?
Not yet. So it comes out in December. So okay. December 3rd.
So did they send you a demo or the full version of the game?
So I was playing a Stadia demo. It was not Stadia. It was a remote demo. So it was very similar to Stadia, where I was playing on a remote PC from somebody at Ubisoft.
Cool.
So it was 4 hours of that. So I never had a physical copy of the game in my possession. I never had a digital copy of the game in my possession. If I wanted to go back and play it right now, I couldn't, which is sad because I want to go back and play it right now.
This game did really catch my attention. And when I first saw it, I was like, wow, this looks a lot like Breath of the Wild. This looks like it could really be fun. And this was back when it was called Gods and Monsters. And then I completely forgot about it. And then when it came back as Immortals Fenyx Rising, I didn't immediately make the connection that it was the same game. So I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on this.
I have to be semi-careful. I'm not sure how much of this I can... I mean, I put out my first impressions on this, so I'm going to try to stick close to that. And at the same time, too, I just want to point out that my brain is not functioning at like 100% at the moment. So I'm going to do my best to explain this without rambling or sounding like I'm going to fall asleep.
Okay.
But this game is pretty much Breath of the Wild meets God of War. From a mechanic standpoint, this game takes the best features of Breath of the Wild and it incorporates it into a very, very different experience. But at the same time, it feels very, very familiar.
So when you say best features, what are some of those features specifically?
So I'm going to go down a very short list of what's similar. The art style is very similar. It's this cel-shaded, vibrant, colorful world. So it's not like uber realistic like God of War. It looks like it comes out of like a Nintendo-ish cel-shaded type of game. Very, very large open world. If you can see it, you can go, blah, blah, blah. There's a stamina meter. The stamina meter looks just like the one from Breath of the Wild.
That's one of the worst things in Breath of the Wild.
it's there, and it's expandable. You can eat food to make it go up again. So that's very similar, too. You can tame wild horses by crouching and hiding and sneaking up and getting them. You can climb anything and everything. So if there is a straight-up mountain that you're looking at in the distance, you can climb it. And your stamina meter goes down every time you do. That is by far, I'd say, the area of the game that is the most similar by far. Like, it looks exactly like Breath of the Wild.
Do you think it was influenced by Breath of the Wild?
Absolutely. There's no way it could not have been.
I feel like I heard the developers talking about how it was not, and that it was...
Yeah, they're full of shit. Oop.
I thought I remembered hearing, I hope I'm right about this, that it was an idea that stemmed from Assassin's Creed, where they...
And I can see that. So, everybody wants to think, if you're a Nintendo fan, people want to think that Breath of the Wild was like this brand new experience, and it ripped a lot of stuff off of Assassin's Creed. It did. Assassin's Creed was one of the very first, like, climate, run, parkour, like, it was this big open world that you can explore. Breath of the Wild did something very different with that mechanic, but Assassin's Creed is the foundation of a lot of what Breath of the Wild was. But this game is Breath of the Wild. Like, it just is. I challenge you to watch the 20-minute video I put up of me playing this game, and you tell me this game is not Breath of the Wild.
All right. I've got it queued up right now. I'm looking at it on my screen.
There are mini dungeons in this game that are almost identical to shrines. So you go into the mini dungeon, it's like a shrine, there's a puzzle. A lot of them are physics-based puzzles that you have to, like, move a ball into a hole. Like, it was so blatant.
So, like, is this rooted in Greek mythology?
Yes.
Okay.
And all of this sounds like I'm bashing it, and I am not bashing this game. This game is a blast. This game did things that were so well done. It took Zelda mechanics and made them better, in my opinion.
But how is the combat?
That's the biggest area that I'm happy about with this game.
Oh, really? Okay.
You have two dedicated weapons at any time. You have a sword and you have an axe. So one's a heavy weapon, one's a light weapon. And you can kind of string together combos. So in that respect, it feels a bit more like God of War in its combat. I like this combat more than Breath of the Wild's combat.
Ooh.
Hand to hand. Breath of the Wild focused heavily on mechanics. Or not mechanics, on physics. Mm. Where you could drop things and have it roll and you can explode something. And, like, there's not as much of that in this game. It's more grounded in hand-to-hand combat.
Okay.
It does a very, very good job.
That was generally my approach in Breath of the Wild anyway. I didn't create these elaborate projects. I just went in and fought.
So. I mean, there's also the a parry mechanic, very similar to Breath of the Wild, where you can parry and stun them and, you know, attack them at that point, too. It doesn't really go into bullet time, but... It's very similar.
Cool.
In my impressions, I am very quick to point out that even though this game obviously took something from Breath of the Wild, in no way should that be a deterrent from you to pick this game up, or at least to give it a shot. It is very different in terms of tone. It is very different in terms of storytelling. And at the same time, too, it feels incredibly familiar. There was moments in the game I was using a Xbox One controller that's very close to a PS or a Nintendo Switch Pro controller. There was moments in the game where I was getting tied up because I kept going back to how this should work in Zelda. So I'd push the button that it would, like, jump off. Like, let's say I wanted to jump off a cliff and glide. I pushed the button that you would in Breath of the Wild, and it didn't work, and it took my brain a bit to kind of memorize what I had to do in this game. And that leads me to one other point, too. You get a pair of wings in this game, and the wings are kind of broken, so you can't, like, fly. You glide.
Okay.
So you have to be up top, like, a very high area that you can jump off, and you can glide to your destination, and as you glide, your stamina meter goes down, so you have to be quick. Or you have to eat food while you're gliding, or you have to get your stamina meter up higher. Very similar, once again, to Breath of the Wild. But again, I had so much fun with this game. This game was funny. There are two narrators in the game. It is Zeus and Prometheus, who are narrating as you do everything, and it's a very comical kind of narration. It's very hammy. It's tongue-in-cheek. And at moments, I'm like, okay, these guys need to shut up. But it was always kind of funny when they would come back and narrate something that was going on from their perspective. I mean, they're gods and they're watching this mortal do something. It's like a fish out of water type scenario. It was entertaining. It really was. And there's a very different, like, it's a huge tone shift from this game in Breath of the Wild. If you are a fan of Breath of the Wild, at bare minimum, if there's a demo of this game, pick it up and try it. Because I am picking this game up day one just to see how far this game can go.
Are you going to pick it up for a Switch?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I played this on PC in 1080p, and it was absolutely gorgeous. I have yet to play a Switch demo of this game yet. I'm hoping that Ubisoft is kind enough to send one over before it comes out. But I might even pick this up for PS5 when that comes out, because it's that good.
Cool.
It was so much fun.
I'm glad to hear that, because it was one that initially really caught my attention, and I do tend to like stories that are rooted in Greek mythology. I'm actually playing one now, Hades, which I think everybody's playing, which is a roguelike that is not a style of game that I like. Are you a roguelike fan?
No, not at all. I don't have the patience.
I don't either. I hate it because I feel like every single time you make progress, you kind of have to go back to the beginning. But this game solves for that in such an unbelievably impressive way. The entire game is voiced, and the interactions that you have with characters, I don't know how to say this without really spoiling it. You're a character who is a god. So your whole premise is you're trying to escape the underworld, and you die throughout this process, but you just respawn in the underworld. But everyone is aware of the fact that you died. Because you're a god, you can't stay dead. So as you interact with these characters on your journey, they know that you died. And as you're doing certain things, like let's say you beat a particular character, that character remembers that you beat them the next time that you talk to them. And I don't think that I've heard the same line of dialogue twice in the entire time I've been playing it. I cannot even imagine. Every single time I interact with the character, I think at some point I'm going to hit a loop where they're going to start repeating what they said. I haven't yet. And I'm hours and hours and hours into this game. That simple fix, combined with how smooth and satisfying the combat is, has me going back to it. I only started playing it because I needed a little filler until Pikmin or Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity comes out, and I just wanted something relaxing to play. I was like, I'll just try this out. It's only 25 bucks. Wow, this is a $60 game easily. I don't know why they're selling it for 25 bucks.
I haven't picked it up yet. You're selling it though, for sure.
You cannot go wrong for the $25. It is doing things that I have not seen done in games yet. The story is so impressive, and I can't imagine that any two people who play it have the exact same experience, because you choose a different weapon, you go a different route, your chambers are randomly generated. It's part of the story why they're randomly generated. So every aspect that I dislike about a roguelike, the way that they frame it in this is perfect. It's like they said, hey, what situation can make all these obnoxious, annoying, roguelike elements make sense in this storyline? And that's exactly what it is. Every character is extremely well developed, and the voice acting is top notch. I don't think I've ever played a game that had better voice acting than this. This is better voice acting than some shows. The character is really likable and quite charming, and the characters that you meet are very interesting. So
I think you sold me on this. I think I'm going to have to pick this one up.
I keep going back to it, even though I'm like, okay, I beat the game, I'm done. And then I'm like, oh, I did not even scratch the surface of what this game has to offer. You beat it and you realize that's just the beginning. That's just the beginning. And then you just keep going, and there's incentive to play it over and over again. So the replayability factor, I've never seen anything like this. Now, to be fair, I don't play a lot of roguelikes. But this one in particular, it really grabbed me. And I keep playing it, and I keep going back to it. And I thought, I'm only going to play this until Pikmin comes out, which I played, and I really liked the demo, and I'm excited to give Pikmin 3 the my full attention when it actually does release, because I hated it on the Wii U because of the controls. But I think I'm going to come back to this after that. It just has so much there, and I don't feel like I've seen it all yet. And it doesn't seem to be slowing down at any point, anytime soon.
Man, I have the eShop page up right now. Like, I think I'm ready to dive in on this one.
Yeah, you'll be. I wouldn't even say it's a slow burn. The voice acting will grab you right away.
Yeah.
And I think just knowing that everything that you achieve, everything that you accomplish, and even all of your failures transform the environment and transform your interactions. So it incentivizes you to just keep going. And it never got boring. It never gets boring. It's so fast-paced. It's got a lot going for it.
You know, it's funny because as I get older, I realize how important voice acting is in most of the games I'm playing. Even in RPGs, I just beat Dragon Quest VIII on the 3DS, a game that came out like 20-plus years ago on the PS2. And the voice acting was top-notch. Like, it kept me invested in the game the entire time. I put 30 hours of, like, time into the game. Nearly every line of dialogue in that game is just expertly voice acted. The reason I played this one was because Dragon Quest XI was, like, my favorite game of last year. It was just that darn good. And 8 is on par with that, too. So I'm excited just by the voice acting alone in this game that you're mentioning. I'm excited to try it out.
I also tried to play something that I could really only do one session with, and it's the suckiest game to release this year, Super Mario 3D All-Star.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's garbage. It's
what?
I cannot believe that Nintendo actually released this. It's shamefully garbage. They didn't even fix mistakes that were in the other games. I cannot believe that they're trying to pass that 64 off as a playable game. There's only one group of people who can play this. People who've already played it. I was like, I have to try this on my kids. Because I played this when I was 13 years old. I have not played it again since. I 100%ed it. It's been a while, but I do know it. It's familiar in my mind. I start playing it and I'm immediately able to play it. The first 2 or 3 seconds, I was like, wow, Mario's movement really holds up. And then I tried to jump on a post. And I was like, oh, no, it does not. And then I tried to adjust my camera. Oh, no, it does not. And I'm like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a kid who's never played this game can pick it up and actually experience it. Now, these are kids who've played Mario Odyssey. These are kids who've played Breath of the Wild. So they have certain expectations when they use the controls. And this game looks vaguely similar. So I give it to my son, who's a video game savant. And I was like, maybe I'm wrong. Because for about 10 minutes, he's laughing and playing and running around and kicking Goombas. And I'm like, okay, all right. It's just a me thing. I have been spoiled by modern games, and this game was not modernized enough. So maybe it's not just a nostalgia play. Maybe there are actually kids who can play this. And then at the 10-minute mark, he's like, I'm bored. I hate this game. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds right. And
it's a tough nut to crack, though, for Nintendo.
What's so hard about just updating a classic? They did
if
it.
If you change too much, you're going to alienate the people that would buy it. They would be complaining to their heart's content.
But who would not?
The game I'd want.
Every one of them would have bought it. And why not have both? Make your Nintendo 64. Nintendo Online title, just release the emulation if that's what you're going to do, and then take your Mario Odyssey engine and make Nintendo 64. Then you have...
And not even they don't even necessarily have to do that. And I think we talked about this once before, where the source code of Mario 64 got completely reverse engineered. It's available on PC natively in 4K in widescreen. People are doing quality of life improvements to it.
Okay.
To the original source code. So the fact that the game's not even widescreen, I take offense to that.
I do too. It controls like garbage. The controls were revolutionary 20 years ago, or whenever it came out, when I was 13, more than 20 years ago. But now, to try to pass this off the way that they did as this game, it's not a $20 game. Like, even if you, like, say each game is $20 for a 6-inch tile. Yeah. It is a garbage pack. It actually makes me, it sours my original impression of the game. And to be totally fair, I did not play Sunshine or Galaxy because I don't want to have those experiences ruined for me. I loved
Galaxy
Sunshine.
Galaxy looks great.
I loved Galaxy great. Too. Not Galaxy 2. I never played Galaxy 2. I loved Galaxy also. But I was so burned by Mario 64, which out of all 3D Mario games, Mario 64 was my favorite. It was the
You did pick the one that had the no quality of life improvements for the most part.
The other ones didn't have any quality of life improvements either. They had quality of life deprovements.
Yeah, they did kind of crop the cutscenes in Sunshine.
And you don't have you don't have the pressure sensitive buttons anymore.
That's true. They did fix that. Did you see what they did for the dialogue with Flood?
No, I didn't.
Where so it's hilariously bad. So there was moments where it's like, in order to spray the button, press the R button on your gamepad. And obviously the buttons don't line up with the dialogue that was in the game that were spoken. So instead of recording them again, they just cut out the button, so it would say, in order to press the to squirt water, press the, then there'd just be this dead air, and then it would go straight to button.
It's so cheap.
It was really bad. They could have re-recorded it. It wasn't that difficult. Anybody can emulate the sound of Flood. It's not like the best voice acting on the planet. So I'm with you to a certain degree, but it's bare bones for the most part. Like, it's three classic games. It's not a lot of frills.
No frills! No frills.
They have the music. They have the jukebox. I mean, that's something.
Not really. You can't even play the music without being tethered to your Switch, so...
But Nintendo used to care about this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, when the Nintendo DS came out, a game called Super Mario 64 DS came out with it.
Yes.
A radically different game. With radical quality of life improvements, 4 playable characters, new levels, new bosses, new
textures.
See,
Where's that? That's the game I wanted.
And it was $30.
Yeah,
come on. And it wasn't that bad.
Come on. If they could do that for the 3DS, why could they not do something to the only thing that they did was sharpen up the graphics so that it's not offensive to the eye. That's really all they did.
Does that make you concerned a bit for Skyward Sword?
It doesn't, because I don't really know if Nintendo has the cojones to tackle Skyward Sword.
It's happening. I'm so positive it's happening that it's probably
all right,
not
going to happen. Here's why I'm not concerned about it.
Okay.
The Zelda team is superior to the Mario team. There has not been... I think I realized I just don't like 3D Mario. And that's a TJ thing. I'm not having fun with 3D Mario. To me, Mario is a 2D platformer. I enjoy Mario that way. But the Zelda team, every remake that they've done has been meaningful and quite amazing. Quite amazing. Yeah. I loved Link's Awakening. They found a way to take a Game Boy game and make it feel fully playable on the Nintendo Switch. They pretty much took the, I don't want to say worst, because that's not how I mean it. I liked Link's Awakening, and I think it was fun for what it is, but they took the lowest quality. I don't know. How do I say this and say what I'm meaning? Link's Awakening was the most technically limited. And they found some way to take the most limited game that was released for all of the Nintendo, all of the Zelda series, and they made it brand new and gave it this fresh coat of paint, and everything felt really good to play for Link's Awakening on Switch. So if they do Skyward Sword, I feel like they're going to give it the time, love, and tenderness that it needs to be a good game, which is not what Mario got. Mario deserves better. And the sad thing is, Nintendo made money hand over fist on this, so there's zero incentive for them to do better.
It's true. I can't complain with what you're saying. I can't argue with it. again, with Mario 64, if you change it too much, people would get upset. If you change it not at all, people get upset. I think the happy medium would have been widescreen. Widescreen support, and that's
well,
it.
Well, look
have
at you what you played... just... Even what you just said would have been perfect. You got these people who are taking the original source code and giving it quality of life improvements, improving the graphics, making it widescreen. Why couldn't they just do that? Like, yeah. Even that kind of stuff would have improved it.
Are you a Halo fan at all?
I am like a black hole for Halo. I just... It has... I can't get into it at all.
On the Xbox One, there was a game called the Halo Anniversary Collection. And it was a pretty substantial upgrade to Halo. Like, it looked like a next-gen game, the original Halo on Xbox. But you could push a button on your controller, and in real time, it would swap you back to the original graphics. Like, in real time, no loading, no nothing. So if you wanted to go back and forth between next-gen and original Xbox, it was one button press away.
Hmm.
Something like that, I feel like, would have been a happy medium. Like, update the textures so Mario has more than 5 polygons. make it widescreen. And if you want to get that purest experience, load up the purest version of the game.
Or play the original. Like, if that's what you're going for, play the original game. These games are not... Galaxies, probably okay. But Sunshine and 64 are not playable by a modern audience. If you've played them in the past, you might be able to make the adjustments. You might be able to still have fun with these games that you used to play by playing them again on the Switch, and that has its novelty. But as new games for a new generation of Switch players, I beta tested it on my own kids. They can't play these games. These games are garbage to them. They're like, just put Odyssey back on, or just put Breath of the Wild on. They can't be bothered with how junky these are. And Nintendo established the precedent themselves with the original Mario All-Stars. The original Mario All-Stars took the first four, if you count both the American and Japanese version of Super Mario Bros. 2, and they did transform them. They up-resed all of the graphics into 16-bit. All of them were originally 8-bit. So you got that huge graphical improvement right there. They redid all the backgrounds. They redid everything. And they also subtly messed with the physics of the game to some extent. And in that way, you got to re-experience something that you already loved, but in a new way. And that's kind of what they should have done with these two, at the very least.
But did it have a jukebox. Just saying.
You got me there.
I did. TJ, I'd love to keep talking. I am falling asleep, and it's not because of you. You are a very witty and smart man. But
you got to go get your 2 hours until you,
I got to get my 2 hours.
Take your food break.
Where can the good folks at home find you?
You can find me on the Nintendo Wire YouTube channel. Actually, I know it's been a little quiet on the Western front. You may be interested to know, Jason, I do have a video planned for this week.
What?
Yeah, I know. Can you believe it? It's been a while.
What is it for?
It's been a hot minute. Might have a little something to do with Amiibo.
Interesting.
And so if you are not subscribed, then now would be a good time. Or if you are subscribed and you've fallen asleep because I'd never release anything anymore, go ahead and hit that notification bell so you can know as soon as it goes up. I'm not quite far enough along to give an exact release date, but it will be this next week. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter at Custom Conquest.
You can find me on my personal Twitter account at AmiiboJason over at NintendoWire.com, where I'm putting out content as much as I can. I have video content coming out on a weekly basis, not as often as I would like with the new baby, but that's going to be changing soon. I'm still doing 2 videos a week right around there. So you can find me at NintendoWire, at YouTube.com/NintendoWire, and on Twitter at AmiiboJason. So that's it. Anything else before we close out?
No, man. I think that's it. Great to talk to you again.
You too. Until next time, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.
All right.